since the sermon today is about pilgrimage, I have for you two readings, one person talking about pilgrimage and one pilgrim actually reflecting on what the pilgrimage meant to him. The first is from author Phil Kozenow from his book, The Art of Pilgrimage. In The Mythic Image, mythologist Joseph Campbell writes of a sacred place where the walls and laws of the temporal world may dissolve to reveal a wonder apparently as old as the human race. Belief in such a place, a holy temple, a sacred mesa, or an archive of sacred knowledge, inspires hope in the pilgrim's soul. An encounter there transfigures it. The prospect stirs the soul, demands a leap of faith, and awakens joy at the crossroads. If taken in this spirit, pilgrimage to any sacred place is poetry in motion, a winding road toward meaning. And the second reading is from Malcolm X. He wrote letters from abroad, quite a lot of them, in 1964 when he took his first pilgrimage to the holy city of Mecca. Never have I witnessed such sincere hospitality and overwhelming spirit of true brotherhood as is practiced by the people of all colors and all races here in this holy and ancient land, the home of Abraham, Muhammad, and all the other prophets of Holy Scriptures. For the past week, I have been utterly speechless, spellbound by the graciousness I see displayed all around me by people of all colors. Last night, on April 19th, I was blessed to visit the holy city of Mecca. I made my 7 circuits of the Kaaba. There were tens of thousands of pilgrims from all over the world. They were all colors, from blue-eyed blondes to black-skinned Africans, but all were participating in the same ritual, displaying the same spirit of unity and brotherhood that all my experiences in America had led me to believe were not possible between white and non-white. The experiences of this pilgrimage have taught me much. And each hour here in the Holy Land opens my eyes even more. On all of our pilgrimages to every place, may our eyes be opened bit by bit and hour by hour to the unity that connects us all. I have been over this last church here, as many of you will remember, I hope. I've been working my way through a series of sermons on the 5 pillars of Islam. Those pillars, which I do not expect you to have memorized, are the belief in the oneness of God, daily prayers, almsgiving, sacrifice, and finally, pilgrimage. Those are the 5 steady pillars of practice that hold up the Muslim faith. Now, I have for some reason put off sacrifice to the end. I guess I needed more time to grapple with that. So we won't do sacrifice until a few weeks from now. But today we'll skip ahead 1 and spend some time talking about pilgrimage, the sacred journey to a holy place. The ancient city of Mecca, that place that Malcolm X in 1964 went and traveled and learned and grew, it's the most holy site of pilgrimage in all of Islam. And each and every faithful Muslim makes an effort, at least once during their lifetimes, to complete that pilgrimage to Mecca. It's a city located in modern Saudi Arabia, and it houses an ancient square temple structure. A lot of you will have seen pictures of it. It's a great black box, and it's said to have been built by Abraham. And it's called the Kaaba. That's the structure that Malcolm X walked 7 times around. Under the Prophet Muhammad, the city and that ancient temple were dedicated to the worship of Allah. And from that time on, the Hajj, or pilgrimage, became the sacred obligation of faithful Muslims. Over 2 million people make the pilgrimage to Mecca every single year. 2 million people. Over 2 million people walk 7 times around the Kaaba and try to touch the black stone that is supposed to date to the time of Adam and Eve, that is the cornerstone of the structure's eastern corner. It's this incredibly striking act of religious veneration. The Hajj draws Muslims from all over the world in every walk of life to that one place where together, for a brief time, all the class differences and all the social stigmas and even the violent barriers between Sunni and Shiite don't matter. For that one time, the Muslim people stand together as one. They circle the stone that their ancestors circled before them, stretching back 1,000 years. Now, when you get a bunch of scientists and historians together to talk about the Kaaba, about the famous black stone that is there on the corner of it, they cite lots of theories that the stone was probably an ancient meteorite, that the structure was probably a part of ancient Babylonian worship practices later adopted by Islam. The site stretches back to a history that goes far beyond, but inclusive of, the development of Islam itself. Pilgrim travelers have been born to this place since before Muhammad ever came into existence, just as pilgrim travelers have been coming to places of worship all over the world since human beings first looked up to the sky and wondered about the source of it all and the meaning of their little bitty lives. Why do 2 million people pick up and travel each year to Mecca? What are they looking for? Is there any truth to be found along a sacred journey, even if the stones are only old meteors and the sites are merely crumbling remnants of religions gone before? There are places on the earth that attract pilgrims, searching souls to them throughout the ages. And in February, I was lucky enough to visit just such a place. I was lucky enough to join the throngs of searching pilgrims, along with my husband John and a whole other posse of liberal clergy. I traveled to Jordan, Israel, and Palestine. And I found myself on one particular sunny afternoon, right smack dab in the middle of the ultimate pilgrim's city. The city, you know it, sacred to Christianity, Judaism, and second only to Mecca in Islam, Jerusalem itself, the mother of all pilgrimage sites. The streets of Jerusalem, if I can try to weave an image for you, the streets of Jerusalem are not like streets at all. They're alleyways and shopping malls and delicatessens and playgrounds and holy shrines, and they're 10 feet wide, and somehow cars do traverse them. With centimeters to spare between a 1999 Pontiac convertible and an ancient wall built by the Crusaders in 1199, this is the holy jumble that is Jerusalem. The streets are not like streets at all. They're living arteries of commerce and entertainment and religion and the hustle-bustle intersection of all three. And one of these tiny streets, virtually indistinguishable from all the others, the shadowed passageway, one of them is called the Via Dolorosa, or the Way of Sorrows. And it's supposed to wind the path from Jesus' condemnation by Pontius Pilate to Calvary, where the cross is said to have stood, and the tomb where this man is said to have become transcendent. Now, I did not grow up venerating a black stone as old as creation and praying in the direction of the ancient temple in Mecca, but I did grow up attending St. Matthew's Catholic Church, and I spent a great many hours staring up at the walls of that sanctuary gazing in rapt and sometimes frightened attention at these 14 carven images of a man picking up a cross, dropping a cross, picking it up again, making his way to the familiar ending we all know so well, the stations of the cross. 14 images of this journey. Now, I have to say that when John and I joined up with this group for our trip to what is called commonly the Holy Land, the stations of the cross weighed heavily on my mind. I cannot even imagine the number of times I have walked through convent gardens and church hallways, watching those 14 stations pass me by from condemnation to death, proceeding by me in stark representation of this journey down the way of sorrows. And here I would be, not in some convent garden, not in a sun-streaked church nodding off during a boring sermon, but right there where they say it all happened. So I called my mom up and I was like, I am going to walk the Via Dolorosa, the way of sorrows. And she was very impressed by me. Now, I said earlier that when scholars and historians get their hands on the actual nature of the Kaaba and that holy black stone, they certainly have a great number of theories. It is ever more true about when scholars and historians get to talking about the supposed path of Jesus' crucifixion. In fact, there are no less than two sites in Jerusalem that claim to be the tomb of Jesus. They both claim to be the tomb of Jesus, and pilgrims go to both of them with no apparent contradiction. Nobody can agree where and if anything happened like tradition says it did, and in fact, there have been several different streets called the Via Dolorosa in Jerusalem over the years. And the fact is that no such thing as the Stations of the Cross even existed till European tourists started showing up in Jerusalem and asking the locals where Jesus walked. It was, in other words, a manufactured pilgrimage site. It wasn't the real deal. Like most other sites of pilgrimage and reverence, the Via Dolorosa is what we on our trip called a commemoration site. It's an important and ancient and beautiful fake. And though I couldn't wait to see it, and the thought of being there haunted my imagination, I wasn't sure if I should be annoyed by all the religio-tourism surrounding it or inspired. We walked through the city gates leading to the Via Dolorosa, gates built in the 1600s by the Turkish Sultan Suleiman the Magnificent. We walked past the entrance to the Temple Mount, through which no non-Muslim can currently enter, because of such strife surrounding the temple today. We walked into this tiny, winding street, and it could have been any street. The people laughed and elbowed one another to get through. Cars honked and kids chased balls right into the street. One child almost ran smack into a vendor selling hot bread off of a cart. Souvenir sellers selling plastic crosses and holy water crowded in around us, seeing fresh cash ripe for the picking. Old men played checkers on overturned barrels, and as I walked on, passing each of 14 small chapels and plaques to mark those 14 stations I had spent an entire childhood imagining, I realized that the power of the place was not in its literal truth or falsehood, but in the lesson it could teach me if I just shut up and listened. There, walking along that crowded street, jostled by all of these people, I imagined a man condemned, going to his demise just like 1,000 men and women before and after him, just a single downtrodden man walking along a busy thoroughfare, carrying whatever burdens were his lot. Some people threw things at him, and some people stared like they were looking at a particularly bad car crash on Route 66. And the vast majority of people just ignored him and went on with their lives as if nothing were happening at all. I imagine this man, not unlike any man, carrying this heavy thing, dropping it in the middle of the street, hoping somebody somewhere would help him pick it up. And I remembered that this walk of sorrows, this Via Dolorosa, is happening all over the world, a million times over, every single day. Good people who say brave things walk in the midst of the multitudes, and some people throw things at them, and some people mock them, and the vast majority of us go on with our lives in the midst of this hustle-bustle without even noticing. Good people who say brave things die all the time. The story has been repeating itself since long before Jesus ever lived, and it will happen again and again, far into the reaching future. Good people go unnoticed, except to be hounded and hunted and hurt. And when I remembered that, I stopped caring if it was a commemoration site or not. When I gave up my fierce insistence on the literal, I stopped looking for the holy site so that I could debunk it and started looking for a little bit of holy truth inside of myself. And for that half hour, I slipped gently over the line that separates a tourist from a pilgrim. And for that half hour, the thought of 2 million Muslims circling an ancient stone 7 times didn't seem so strange anymore. Now, I know I usually talk around my point a lot in sermons, so I'm just going to tell you my point this time. My point is simply this: there is a mighty difference between being a tourist and being a pilgrim. There is nothing wrong with vacation. There is nothing wrong with going to Cabo and having a margarita in one hand and a romance novel in the other. Nothing wrong. But the objective of a tourist is fundamentally different than the objective of a pilgrim. A tourist is refreshed. A pilgrim is transformed. A tourist goes on the journey to get away, to decompress, and maybe even to learn a thing or two. But a pilgrim goes out into the world with a desire to welcome change within themselves. When I was walking down the streets of Jerusalem, looking at old stones and soaking up the sights, I was a tourist of the best sort, excited to be in this exotic place, seeing things I'd never seen before. But when I let the place creep into my soul and get me to ask questions about how I live my life, then for a blessed half an hour I was a pilgrim on a pilgrim's journey, transformed even just a little bit by the journey itself. A pilgrimage is a journey of the soul. It invites one's spirit to meet one's feet along the way and undergo a path of transformation. And here's my second point. A pilgrimage is not really about the place you are visiting. It's not about the street itself. It's not about the grand golden dome or the mosque or the holy sanctuary. It's about the intersection between the sacred journey and one's own soul. When people go to sacred places, what they're really looking for is some sense of the sacred inside of themselves, some truth that comes out along the journey but resides within. Thus, it wasn't the Via Dolorosa that mattered. It's what the Via Dolorosa taught me about me that mattered, that I am too often blind to the suffering of others, that I, too, fail to see the good and brave people who suffer for their courage, and that the way of sorrows does not live perched on the walls of anyone's churches, but in the streets of every city, in the pathways of every town, that I could be one to lift the burden of a struggling soul, that others, maybe some of you, could be generous enough to lift my burdens when I cannot carry them myself, that none of us need to walk the way of sorrows alone. That's what mattered at the Via Dolorosa, and I don't really care if Jesus walked there or not. When people mistake the ultimate goal of pilgrimage with getting to or taking possession of the physical space that the holy guru actually walked, they take the emphasis off the personal transformation that the sacred space invites them to undergo. And when personal transformation is removed from a spiritual journey, nothing's left but a hollow idol of a holy place, something worth fighting over rather than revering. A pilgrimage not about getting there physically. It's about getting somewhere spiritually. And you don't necessarily need an ancient black stone or a narrow city street to do it. Author Phil Kozenow said that the power of pilgrimage is that even though we might travel out to new lands, we travel inward to new realizations about our own lives. Somehow the power of pilgrimage brings us in relationship to our deepest selves so that we can go back home with a greater understanding about what it means to be alive. Malcolm X made that pilgrimage to Mecca in 1964. And he came back a transformed man. He saw while he was there, for the first time in his life, an environment where people of all races knelt down in prayer together, and for the first time ever, he felt safe and empowered among white people. He came back to the United States after that pilgrimage, and he preached a new message to the world, including his Muslim brothers and sisters, that unity was not impossible. That pilgrimage changed him. It gave him a renewed voice and an uplifted vision. You do not have to go to Mecca, and you do not have to go to Jerusalem. There are holy places all around you, and there are sacred transformations waiting to happen. Tourism is not the same as pilgrimage, and pilgrimage is not about the place. It's about your journey. Your sacred, engaged journey, and it's about finding the wisdom in yourself. So go off into the woods. Go off into the wilderness. Go home and take a nap. Wherever you go, go with a pilgrim's heart, searching for your own transformation around every corner. May it be so.